Hello everybody. Pete went out a few days ago and did a recording about the recent general election results in the UK. Now, those of you who are new to our recordings may find this a little bit noisy. We have our process when we do these recordings where we like to walk and think and talk. And these were born out of the kind of conversations that Pete and I always had when we were out walking, so we started recording them. And now we always do outdoor broadcasts because we love to sort of walk and talk and think. And just the process of the walking and being outside just seems to be very conducive to the kind of topics that we want to talk about. So this is leading up to me saying this recording was just a little bit noisier than normal, so please don't be put off, because right at the beginning, Pete passes somebody who's perhaps playing a radio, and there's this odd burst of music. And when Pete came back, and I usually, if he records one on his own, I usually listen to it just to see how, you know, how it went and everything. And I said, "What was that music at the beginning?" It almost sounds like you were purposely giving yourself a soundtrack to fade in with. And he said, "Oh no, I was just passing someone with a radio." So just don't be put off. It's a little bit noisier than normal, but there's a lot of good content here. So I hope you find it interesting and useful and enjoyable too.
Welcome to Heart Yoga Radio. It's the 22nd of June. 2017. Yesterday, the Queen's speech occurred in the House of Lords at the UK Parliament, which marks the beginning of a new Parliament after the snap election. Now, if you scroll back through the podcast, you will find that there is a comment on the snap election that I made pretty well when it was called. And in that podcast, I examined Mr. Corbyn's capabilities and actions and achievements in the attempt to see if the vilification that he was receiving from the press and the broadcast media, the mainstream media, were in fact justifiable. And I came to the conclusion that no, they weren't, and Mr. Corbyn was a consummate politician. And the result of the snap election, I think, proved me right. Any international listeners, Mr. Corbyn is the leader of the UK Labour Party. And though the UK Labour Party didn't win the election, the Tory Party lost quite a lot of seats and lost its majority in the House of Commons. Now, Mrs. May, the Prime Minister and leader of the Tory Party, called the snap election in order to improve her majority in the House, which was at the time it was quite slim. And because the country is now in the throes of Brexit negotiations with the EU, Mrs. May thought that she would get a much clearer ride through this process if she had a much improved Commons majority. Now the polls and so forth and the opinion and the general punditry were saying that Corbyn was a dead duck. And Mr. Corbyn had in fact been elected as Labour leader as the kind of nominal left-wing candidate, and the bookies were giving him 200-1 against odds. And of course what happened was that he got in with a pretty large vote. This was possibly because Ed Miliband, the previous Labour leader, had brought in an associate membership in order to expand the grassroots of the party, which for a small fee of £5 you could vote in leadership elections and so forth. And a lot of people signed up for this. And there was quite a movement, and using the internet in a very capable way, and particularly by younger people, to get people to sign up and vote for Corbyn. I mean, I was one of them, by which time the executive of the Labour Party had increased the fee to £25 because they thought that there was, you know, £5 was too cheap and was going to cause some kind of gerrymandering or something like that. Anyway, I paid £25 and voted for Mr. Corbyn. And anyway, he won that. And then there was an attempted coup in the Labour Party by the Parliamentary Labour Party, who really didn't like Corbyn. They thought he was unelectable, and this is what we kept hearing. Corbyn is unelectable. Corbyn is unelectable. And in that kind of mainstream media way. Remember, their methodology is derived from Bernays's work on propaganda. Bernays wrote a book in the 20s, I think, called Propaganda, and it really is about how to manipulate the unconscious mind of populations. And all this kind of mantra shit that we've been getting in the election. Strong and stable, strong and stable, strong and stable, all that kind of crap, you know. With the alliteration and everything it thrown in there. These are all just crude propaganda methods of manipulation. Anyway. Corbyn was, one of these mantras was Corbyn is unelectable, Corbyn is unelectable. Meanwhile, the bloke is raising quite a lot of attention at the grassroots, and the grassroots of the Labour Party grows rapidly to 600,000 or something like that, to the point that the Labour Party is the biggest grassroots party in Europe. Anyway, the Parliamentary Labour Party mounted a coup against Corbyn. A lot of them resigned from his cabinet, his shadow cabinet, and one Owen Smith stood against him in a second party election, and Corbyn won that as well. So he's a bloke, wins two party elections. I think he even improved his majority in the second one. So he was pretty well ensconced there, but in tension with the Parliamentary Labour Party. For the most part, I would say, well, for a very good part of him, like Blairites, the Blair version of the Labour Party was Thatcher Lite. And it really was, you know, this is just commitment to neoliberalism, wade into a criminal war with alongside George Bush, which killed 1 million civilians, or thereabouts. With a completely discredited excuse that Saddam Hussein had got weapons of mass destruction. But nevertheless, it was a view in the Parliamentary Labour Party was that you had to kind of move to the centre in order if the Labour was going to gain any kind of power. Anyway, a great value is placed on capturing the state in these quarters. And I had correspondence with my local MP, he was a Labour MP. We are in a marginal. We'd have we had a Labour MP at the time all this is going on with Corbyn, and I kind of corresponded with the guy. And again, you know, his theme was that Corbyn's unelectable and grassroots movements are all very well, but what really matters is capturing the power of the state. I think probably you do have to capture the power of the state, even if only to tie it down a bit, and to defend against the state's arbitrary actions on ordinary people. And states always do that, even the most benevolent states do that. So, you know, in grassroots, everything good came from the grassroots. Votes for women, votes for working men, votes for women without property, votes for working men without property, gay riots. I mean, it's just a complete host of political developments over centuries have been initiated at the grassroots. I'm going to say the paradigm case is the struggle for women's suffrage. So I kind of was in disagreement there, and saw that Mr. Corbyn was willing to place some value on grassroots movement. I mean, he even did the thing at Parliament, at Prime Minister's Question Times, of reading out questions that had been sent in to him from ordinary people. And he got jeered for this at first, but then it started to appear sort of quite effective, you know, and different. Indifferent. And Corbyn would say, well, you know, what are we here to do in Parliament? We're here to represent our constituents, and here I am telling you what's on their minds. And this did point out that the professional political class really did in fact live in a bubble, and had been completely entranced by the methodologies of spin doctors and propaganda merchants along the lines of Bernays, you know, that they'd succumbed to a modus operandi of crude manipulation of the unconscious minds of the populace. And a lot of this started to become apparent, and young people were very quick to see this. A lot of them don't read the mainstream press, you know, they surf around the internet and so forth. And okay, the internet's got loads of cranky misinformation on it, but also there is real information and real reportage from the ground. So all the time that this is happening, Mr. Corbyn's won two leadership elections. He's built the party up from nothing to a huge grassroots party, but the gutter press is saying he's unelectable day in and day out. Absolute vilification is piled on him, and this I think emboldened Mrs. May to attempt to get a bigger majority, to have a bit less of a rough ride within her own party over the Brexit negotiations. She wanted to be in a position that she could impose, have a clear will to impose, instead of having to endlessly negotiate every minute point, which fair enough, the fear is real enough. Because the bureaucratic load of Brexit's enormous, and to be frank, the civil service doesn't really have the personnel to do anything but skim the surface of the enormous complexities involved. I mean, the other thing, which I mentioned in the last podcast, was that Mrs. May wasn't an elected Prime Minister, because David Cameron resigned over losing the Brexit vote, which incidentally he'd called in a similar political gamble that he lost. You know, David Cameron had wanted to finally silence his Eurosceptic wing, which was like a big chunk of the Tory party that's been creating friction within the Tory party since the UK went into the EU in the 70s. So he thought he could silence them, and of course UKIP was polling millions of votes in elections, and stealing Tory votes in many respects. And Cameron obviously wanted to sideline them too, but his gamble didn't pay off, and the British public said, "Fuck you, let's leave." He'd really, really thought again, that the UK would stay in the EU, and that the public would vote by a good margin to stay in, and he miscalculated another victim of living in the Westminster bubble. So Mrs. May took his place on the vote of a few Tory grandees, basically, not the whole Tory party. And well, she was an experienced politician at the time, having been Home Secretary in the Lib Dem Conservative coalition, so she experienced the top echelons of her party, put her in Cameron's place, because she's not elected by the public. It's not like she'd stood in election as the leader of the party and an aspirant to the prime ministership. She'd just kind of slid sideways when the party had a problem. Again, there's a questionable legitimacy when this happens, and politicians don't like to be hostage to fortune if they can help it, you know. So she took a gamble similar to Cameron's, and lost the majority, lost the slim majority, and Corbyn's performance, the Labour Party's performance, even though they didn't win, they didn't capture the state, but they improved their share of the vote and the number of seats by the biggest margin since 1945, which was the post-war landslide, and which ended up with the Labour Party instituting the National Health Service and certain aspects of the welfare state by 1948. So it's pretty remarkable what happened. And even though Mrs. May then went on to form a government, the future of which is fairly uncertain because we haven't had a debate on the Queen's speech yet, that'll be next week, she needed to form an alliance with the Democratic Unionist Party, an Ulster far-right Unionist Party that sort of, I think it is the majority party in the devolved government, if there was a devolved government, because Stormont has been suspended. So it's all, things all very tricky over there at the moment. Anyway, the DUP are people with long memories, and all of their obsessions stem from the Battle of the Boyne, which took place in the 17th century. And people get steamed up about stuff that happened then. And there's all sorts of kerfuffle about this alliance. The DUP are not famed for their liberal views. They're still into things like closing parks on Sundays and stuff like that. And the press are having a field day with some of its members who believe in things like that the Earth was created in 4000 BC in 7 days, and that evolution is a hoax, and that climate change is a hoax. So they really are kind of stuck in a previous era. And then also, you see, there's an embarrassing connection with unionist paramilitaries. And if Sinn Féin is the political wing of the IRA, well, the DUP is the political wing of the unionist paramilitary. Now, you can argue about the extent of that, whether Sinn Féin is closer to the IRA than the DUP is to the UVF or whatever. The UDA, whatever. But basically, this is an alliance that Mrs. May, I'm sure, would prefer not to have made. And that there are 10 DUP MPs in Westminster, in the House of Commons. And a sort of loose alliance has been formed with them to get the Queen's speech through, even though negotiations on particulars are still ongoing and difficult, it appears. So, it could very well be a lame duck Prime Minister and a dead duck Parliament before too long, this one. Anyway, after the election, Corbyn was smiling all over the place, and the Parliamentary Labour Party all kind of leapt into his bosom. They thought, fuck me, did he? You know, this huge increase in the vote. Whereas the Tories were looking all kind of glum. And now they won. They were able to form a parliament because they were the biggest party, but without an overall majority. I think bringing the DUP in gives them a very slim majority. So this was kind of weird, you know, because you've got the spectacle of rejoicing by technically the losing side, and misery by technically the winning side. Or even now, again, they say there is no clear cut majority. It's a hung parliament, we call this. And we've had them before. Yeah. And so, all the discussions on social media around this, particularly if you look at YouTube, we've got tons of stuff about this from every conceivable angle, plus comments from you know, foreign foreign journalism, which is quite useful to look at because you get a kind of a view from the outside, so like Al Jazeera and Russia Today and so forth, and what the Americans have got to say. And it's worth looking at. But of course, you know, the comment section on YouTube is kind of pretty famous for its trolley nature. It's not as bad as 4chan or anything like that, where trolling is a profession, but it can get pretty horrible. But one of the tropes is, coming from the right, is why do you lot keep saying that Corbyn won? You know, he didn't win, just stop it. You know, stop the euphoria. And I have to say, yeah, the euphoria is still going on. And I don't like wading in on those things. They're a bit horrible, and I just think flame wars and trolls and so forth just to be avoided. It's completely unproductive. But a few times I have waded in, and I've kind of said, well, this is why the euphoria is justified. And firstly, the gutter press is busted. The mainstream media, the billionaire-owned press, is busted. All the main newspapers in the UK are owned by billionaires that live offshore. You know, they're just basically like right-wing propaganda sheets. You know, and they've got no compunction about sinking to the depths of scatological insult and so forth. They're now busted, you know. The thing didn't work. Not only did it not work, Slavoj Žižek makes an interesting point that it probably helped. Because people are not so stupid as to think, well, why are they doing this? They must be running scared, you know. And is it actually really true? Because if you went on the internet, you could see Corbyn in the election campaign addressing rallies in city squares, which is chockably people cheering and shouting and full of enthusiasm. Whereas Mrs. May was going round speaking to selected audiences and surrounded by a bloody bodyguard, you know. And Corbyn does have a people's touch, you know. So, gutter press busted. Gutter press completely busted. All right. Parliamentary Labour Party Blairites busted. They got it wrong. Why should we trust their kind of certain sounding and partially uttered prognostications when they were so wrong about this, that Corbyn was unelectable? Corbyn is clearly electable. So they were busted. The Tory party, of course, were busted. They are kind of pretty well holed below the waterline. They may limp on. I kind of doubt I'll get that far. They'll use the excuse that, you know, we're now in the midst of the Brexit negotiations, and we can't have any further disruptions, or like another general election. And who knows how the public would behave, you know. But I think the Corbynistas are so kind of up on the social media game, and this grassroots movement isn't particularly passive. They were mobilised very expertly in the election campaign, with the door knocking and the talking to people and the phoning, and tremendous effort organised by this new grassroots. That isn't going to go away, you know, so anything could happen. I'm not going to make any kind of a prediction, but don't be surprised if they crash and burn before too long. The Tories, I mean. So there's three things now busted. I think the gutter press is busted once and for all now. And the other thing, of course, is this mobilisation of youth. See, one of the tactics of Labour was to get youth to register to vote. And I suppose the 18 to 35-year-olds in the UK have taken the view, I suppose, a lot of them have never voted until now, taken the view there wasn't no choice. You know, and in the case of Tony Blair, there were very little choice. You know, Thatcher light versus, you know, Thatcher heavy. Actually, not much in it. And it's quite telling that Mrs. Thatcher visited Tony Blair at number 10 after he was elected. She's one of the first people through the door, you know. And also to remember that Blair formed an alliance with right-wing oligarchical press baron Rupert Murdoch. And Rupert Murdoch believes he takes credit for Tony Blair's first win of an election because the Sun backed Tony Blair. But since those days, the social media have developed and spread, and people are more au fait with ways of using it and so forth. And that has happened subsequently. And Labour played a blinder on that too. So I'll just recapitulate the four reasons why the Labour Party is entitled to be smiling. Gutter press busted, or the mainstream media, the billionaire owned press busted. Nobody trusts them anymore. Their days are numbered. Tory party busted. Blairites busted. Oh, I want to add another one. What we call the commentariat. The people who've discovered a modus operandi in the world of propaganda and public discourse, in which you sound very, very authoritative. Preferably, if you're a rightist, in a posh voice, or if you're a leftist, in an educated version of a regional accent. And that will convince people and make you look very important. That's been busted, because they all got it wrong as well. So they're busted. We actually, it's now wide open, out into the open, that actually what their game is just a trick of persuasion. And the building of this huge grassroots and the mobilisation of youth into politics. I think it's a fantastic achievement. I mean, Slavoj Žižek, not known for his for wearing rose-coloured spectacles, declared after the election that it was an ethico-political miracle, because people shouldn't suddenly realise that caring about other people needed to start to play a part in political life, and that they did it. And I don't know, when it comes from somebody like that, you know, you've got to take notice. Anyway, so that's my kind of post-election report. I think I've repeated myself a little bit. And may you live in interesting times.